Parents today have the same old set of worries that their parents had, plus some new ones to go along with what's going on in the world today. So today, parents can add vaping to the list of worries when they have adolescent children or teens or even preteens. So we are going to find out everything we need to know about vaping and how to talk to your child about it and hopefully prevent them from ever getting into it. Today, my guest is Dr. Richard Chung, professor of pediatrics and director of adolescent medicine at Duke University. He's going to fill us in on the facts and how to talk to your child, as I said, the long-term health risks, the consequences if they vape for years to come, and more. Thank you so much for being here, Doctor, on Voices of Pediatrics from Duke University. We're so happy to have you here and get the straight story, because there seems to be so much conflicting news out there. So you're here to set it straight for us.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So to begin, what is vaping and what are the ingredients in the juice, as they call it?
That's right. So vaping is a smoking behavior in which an electronically powered, typically battery powered device is used to heat this, what's called an e-liquid or a juice, as you mentioned, and then it's inhaled as sort of a vapor. And so it's kind of analogous to typical smoking behaviors, but it's more of a contemporary formulation of those, of that behavior. And in this e-liquid or juice, there's usually three different components. So one is the nicotine itself, and we'll kind of get there because that's sort of the crux of the problem in terms of the addictive nature of this. But in addition to nicotine, there's usually some form of flavoring, and then there's something called a solvent. So this is a component of the liquid that kind of holds it together and allows it to be stable and then sold as it's marketed. And so yeah, vaping is kind of the heating of this using a device and the sort of chronic use of that over time.
And aren't there some heavy metals in there too? Is that accurate?
That's right. So with these three ingredients, there are other components. So as the liquids are heated, there are things like formaldehyde and other carcinogenic elements, including heavy metals, as you mentioned. And so that's kind of the crux of the matter in terms of the health implications and the risks of this.
So what does that do to lungs that aren't even fully formed yet in some cases, young lungs that are still growing?
That's right. So there's a couple things in that question you mentioned. One is just the timing of this, right? So vaping is a thing in and of itself, but when we think about vaping in adolescence, right, for young people who are still growing and maturing and for a variety of reasons are particularly vulnerable to the impacts of this, not just actually in their lungs, but also in terms of their neurodevelopment and the addictive nature of this. And so that's kind of one piece of that. But even for adults who vape as well, right, there are impacts of inhaling something that isn't fresh air, part of the challenge though, in this ongoing conversation is that whereas with combustible cigarettes, kind of traditional cigarettes, we have a long track record, right? We have robust literature evidence that demonstrates the known health consequences of that behavior. With vaping, it's a little less clear just because we haven't had as much time with this to really direct connection between this behavior and particular health outcomes, particularly because some of the ones we're worried about, like cancer, let's say, take many years, even decades to manifest. But knowing what's in these liquids and knowing what those components do in other contexts, it is a reasonable connection to be made that there is likely cancer-causing effects here. We do know in shorter term that, let's say, kids with asthma or other lung problems, that vaping causes more issue. It's also been linked with things like chronic bronchitis and other respiratory consequences that we should try to avoid.
Is vaping ever safe? If your child says, it's safe when, fill in the blank.
That's a good question. You know, I think part of the challenge, you know, with this conversation is, especially in clinical settings when we're talking with teenagers and their families about this, there is this temptation to relativize everything, to say, okay, at least, you know, vaping is not as bad as, you know, fill in the blank. And most often it's, you know, like a combustible cigarette, a traditional cigarette, which, truth be told, I think that is a true statement, meaning that vaping is probably less harmful than smoking a pack of cigarettes. It does not mean, though, that vaping is without harm, right? Nor does it mean that vaping is good for you, right? And so those are the kind of questions we want young people and their families to really be asking. Not so much like, is this as bad as something else that I could potentially do? And so that's kind of the conversation and the reframing that we try to accomplish when we're working with teenagers as they think about this.
What are the main dangers so far, from what we know so far? I mean, you mentioned research. Is there any research going on right now about vaping and the consequences?
Yeah. So there's sort of the research around vaping itself, right? And so the inhalation of these vapors and those heavy metals and other potential carcinogens. And so there are studies that show that there are at cellular level indicators of change that are in keeping with the same sorts of changes that you might see in somebody who smokes combustible cigarettes. And so there is evidence to kind of show that there is that linkage. Now, has that been proven to be these concrete many years later outcomes like actual lung cancers or other head and neck cancers? Not quite yet, but the linkage or the early linkage is there. As I mentioned, there are connections to other respiratory issues, whether infections or chronic conditions like asthma. The other piece is this, right, is that it isn't just an issue of inhaling something into your lungs. It's also the chemical impacts of the nicotine itself as an addictive chemical. And so we know that nicotine can have impacts on learning and brain development, which is even separate and above and beyond the addictive nature of it all, right? So when a young person encounters an addictive chemical, whether it's alcohol, tobacco, nicotine, or otherwise, what we know is that because of where they are neurodevelopmentally, the earlier that exposure happens, the more likely that behavior will roll up into a future long-term addiction. We know that the teen brain is different than the young adult and the older adult brain and more vulnerable in many ways. And so, you know, that vaping piece has a lot of impacts, not again, just on the lungs itself, but also the brain and other aspects of development.
Some kids say, oh, I just vape at parties to be cool because I want to fit in. But another survey I saw said about 2 million kids in the U.S. vape. And of those, a quarter of them said that they vape every single day. So that's concerning as well. What I'm saying is it's one thing to do it on the weekends, but to do it every single day of the week.
Right. So I think what you're getting at is there is a spectrum, right, in terms of how often somebody's using a particular vape device. And, you know, the message that we stick to and try to convey is that any vaping, even sporadic, even social vaping or whatever you want to call it, is more than necessary and can be harmful. We know that nicotine is a highly addictive chemical. And I've had many young patients who come in who were sort of just dabbling, right? Experimenting, as we would say. But then very quickly, it kind of spun out of control into this really regular addictive behavior, what we would call clinically more of a dependent situation where they were, without even realizing it, vaping daily and feeling this real strong need to vape in a way that was really unsettling to them. You know, teenagers, although they are eager to experiment and to test out the world, they also don't want to be controlled, right? Whether by their parent or by a chemical, actually. That sort of sense that they're out of control and not really dictating their own destiny is kind of aversive to them. And I've had many young people who say, I didn't realize that it would get that intense so quickly.
Does vaping really help people quit smoking? Because I've heard that excuse before.
Yeah. So there is literature in the adult domain around this idea of using vape nicotine delivery through an electronic vape device as a mechanism to try to move away from combustible cigarettes. And so there is some usage of that in the adult domain. It isn't something that we prescribe, certainly, or recommend for teenagers. And there isn't evidence to show that's a legitimate sort of resource to use. Now, if a teen comes in and they're smoking combustible cigarettes, certainly we want to help them. And there are other ways, whether nicotine replacement therapies otherwise, or certain medications that we might use to help them along. But we wouldn't tell them to get a Juul, certainly, to try to get rid of the cigarette.
I think one thing that just irks parents to no end, at least my friends, because we all have teenagers, is vaping, the liquid, the Juul. It's also accessible. You can even have it delivered to your school now. I mean, that blew me away when I heard that was happening. So when you have them so accessible, how do you get through to teens? Like, I know you know how because you talk to them all the time, but for parents who just can't get it through to their kids, what should we say to them?
Yeah, I think it's such a good question, right? Because it's like a lot of things in the world these days, a lot of potential risks in the lives of young people where they're just so ubiquitous, right? The access to, whether it's a vape, whether it's, you know, harmful internet content, whatever it might be, right? Teenagers are going to find their way to the thing that they're motivated to find. And I think there is something to be said for trying to restrict, right? And doing more kind of on the policy end of things to make it a harder thing to do, right? To make vaping a challenge, at least, so that somebody who's only mildly motivated to start vaping would just find that just enough to kind of dissuade them. And there's actually good literature around that when the cost of vape devices and the access is just a little harder than it was previously, that that actually has a substantial impact on whether somebody vapes in the first place. The other piece, though, is this, right? You know, we can try to insulate young people from risks as much as possible, but we also need to contend with, okay, when they do encounter that thing, how do we prepare them to handle that well, right? It's sort of the typical analogy is like the flu season, right? You want to try to kind of stay away from people who are sick, but you also want to get your flu shot, right? In case you do incidentally run into somebody who might transmit it to you. And so how do we help young people and their families to prepare for that? I think the first thing is going to sound incredibly mundane, but it's just having that conversation, right? I would wager that the vast majority of families have not talked about this specifically, right? They may have talked about it in vague generalities or in passing conversation, but probably have not talked about it specifically. And so just sort of raising it as an issue, getting a sense of what your teen understands or doesn't about it, their degree of curiosity about it, and really not overreacting to it, not kind of squashing it. If they're like, oh yeah, that kind of seems kind of cool, I'm not sort of reflexively squashing that, but saying, oh, you know, tell me why, you know, I can understand, right? The advertisements make it look cool, all these sorts of new things. And being more curious than judgmental. Yeah, the flavors and stuff, right? Being more curious and just gathering that intel, so to speak, so that you can then respond in a more person-specific way to them, right? Teens don't do well when adults like me give them these generalities like, oh, you know, vaping is just bad for you. You know, you shouldn't do it. You might get cancer, stuff like that, right? That may sound like a legitimate comment, but when it's not framed specifically for them in their time, in their place, in their context, then they're not going to hear it, right? It's just sort of a generic catchphrase. And so you got to hear them out first. And then when you do provide feedback or advice, make it very personalized. I think that's usually when there might be some traction.
That's so true, because I did it all wrong, doctor. Early on when my son was a preteen, I would email him every article I found about vaping. I went in one ear out the other. He probably didn't even read them. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, then when I started hearing that some of his friends were vaping and, you know, they still couldn't drive yet, I would like bring it up in the car. And of course, they're like giggling. They're not going to tell me. They're like, no, none of us vape. And I'm like, mm-hmm. So you're so right. Obviously, to just customize it to their life and their friends and what they may be doing. Is there anything else you'd like to cover that we didn't discuss about vaping? Because it is such a hot topic with parents and kids, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you just said, which is it is so common, so prevalent, so ubiquitous that if you haven't had the conversation, you should, right? Because whether they have or will vape or will never vape, you should still talk about it. Because, you know, for that teenager who never picks up a vape, they can still be a positive influence in their social circle. They can have kind of impacts on others. So you might as well talk to them and educate them. Yeah, and just kind of be sort of alert, because the other issue with vaping is that, not to certainly scare people, but, you know, the thing about cigarettes, right, is if somebody's smoking, you kind of know. You can kind of tell from at least, you know, some distance if somebody's smoking. With vaping, it's much covert. The clues of vaping, whether it's the smell or the just visual clues, are just much more subtle. And so it's not uncommon for somebody to be vaping for weeks, even months. And the parents, even parents who are well-connected, just are completely oblivious. And so unless you ask the question, unless you have kind of an eye open, you might miss it. And again, because of how addictive nicotine is, it might get to that point where they're already addicted before you realize it.
And I've read that it's illegal in some states, but not in others. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so the age restrictions can vary in terms of at what age you can purchase and sort of use vape devices. So that can kind of vary from place to place, typically 18, I believe, in most settings.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it more than you know, because I'm sure it's on a lot of parents' minds. If somebody would like to find out more, where can they go?
So there are a few governmental resources, actually. So smokefreeteen.gov, I believe, is the URL. So if you go to smokefreeteen.gov, there's all sorts of resources there, further education, and things also for the teen to look at themselves.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chung, for sharing your expertise. I'm sure you're going to help a lot of people through this.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and check out the entire podcast library for topics of interest to you. This is Voice of Pediatrics from Duke University. I'm Maggie McKay. Thanks for listening.